Well, I love to share my story mostly because I want people to kind of reevaluate. Some of people, they make, I have a lot of people at the gym. They come and talk to me. They talk about the problem. There's a Persian saying. They said, this guy, he came and he said, I have a problem. And the monk told him, hey, go to the desert, to this tree, and drop your problem into that box. So he sat on a donkey. 3 days later, he's by this tree and it is a box. He wants to put the problem inside. And he says, before you put yours, read three. So he pick up three and read them, and he tear his own one because his is nothing compared to the others. Oh, wow. So I like to share my story for you, with people that, hey, it doesn't matter how bad it gets. You got this. Just that's what I'm sharing. There's nothing special about me or as a parent. It's just when you are there, it will kick in, and you just got to stay strong and it will pass. It's a phase that will pass. And that's my message of, you constantly just got to go through stuff and being strong and having faith that good things are coming.
Most of us never learned how to train our brains, which is why most of us needlessly settle, struggle, and worse, suffer. My name is Chris Doris, and I want to make brain training mainstream. This is my series, Tough Talks, Conversations on Mental Toughness. I'm interviewing badasses from all walks of life on what mental toughness means to them and their unique approaches to strengthening their minds. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Tough Talks, Conversations on Mental Toughness. I'm your host, Chris Doris. And before we get to our remarkable guest today, let's take care of our, as always, our one housekeeping item, which is if you're not getting your daily dose mental toughness tips in 30 seconds or less delivered to your email inbox every morning of the year at around 6 a.m. wherever you are on the planet, and if you're not getting my blog posts every Tuesday, and if you're not getting notifications of these new podcast episodes, then let's fix that up real quick, simply, very virtually, effortlessly, by going to christopherdoris.com/lists, L-I-S-T-S. Name, email, click, and you get the goods. All right, so we got a guy today. I was very recently introduced to him. I was so excited to hear about his story and him and the miraculousness that he has created, having gone through unthinkable adversities, that I thought we got to get him on quick. His name is Siavash Fashi. He is from Iran. And, you know, I almost don't even want to read his bio, but I'll give you a little bit of it. He owns this gym now. It's out, it's right there. It's called Six Packs Gym. It's out in Culver City, California, right outside or part of LA. But that's like, the gym is tiny and he's killing. The guy makes the revenue for this, like, I'm telling you, I think it's 800 square feet. Used to be a little tiny gas station. And it took everything in his power to pull off even getting that property and then building it when he had like two dumbbells or some crap like that. And just using his spirit, which you're going to love. That's the first thing I noticed about this guy, is his vibe is amazing. And I think that's why so many people just like, I think it has a lot to do with his success. I really do. But, you know, he's making seven figures revenue from this tiny little gym, and people go hang out there. The mayor kicks it, you know, it's like a congregation point. But the story of how he arrived there, how he arrived here in the United States, how he got out of Iran in the first place, is absolutely mind-blowing, and I'm going to have, and I only have a shell of it, so I am very excited to hear him talk about, I mean, like, what an incredibly dark horse, right, story, you know, against the odds, escaping from Iran, risking his life. And ended up working, just trying to get, not even speaking English, and going to England and finding some job just so he could be, you know, somehow figured out how to get over to the States and did it illegally. Went to jail for a year. He was in maximum security federal prison for the first year of his time in America because he used a fake passport and people all thought he was like a terrorist or something. It's just so weird. And now the guy's just full of love. And watch, just check, I'm telling you, You're going to love this dude's vibe. So that's enough of the story. I don't want to do any more spoiling. So, Siavash, where are you at, man? Let's go find, I want to hear it. Give us this story, brother.
You see him? I see him.
There he is. Divash.
Hello, hello, Chris. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Well, brother, I'm so glad that you recently showed up in my world because I cannot wait to hear your story. When we spoke the other day, I said, don't tell me, man. I don't want to hear it right now because I want it to be nice and fresh for today. I'm excited.
Thank you, Chris. I'm really excited to be here. I respect what you do, and I'd love to be here and share my story with your audience.
Well, then we're going to do that, man. But before we do, I want to know, what is that instrument on the wall behind you?
So actually, this is a...
Oh, there's more than one.
Yeah, both of them are actually... This one, my uncle made it, and the other one is my father made it.
Oh, so, my gosh. That's
so
amazing.
I will dive into this instrument at the... because this is belong to a part of our religious minority, which saved us at the beginning of the Iran Revolution when they considered us an infidel and they were not hiring us. So my father and my uncle, my whole family, they had to build this to basically survive because we were not given jobs. And at the time, even the music was illegal to play music. And so every time they catch us with this type of thing, and they would break them. So I will tell you guys about the story.
All right. Okay, cool. What is the name of that instrument?
It's called tambour. Tambour. And it's one of the oldest instruments in the world. It has no notes. So it's only three strings. And it's made of one piece of wood. It's a strawberry wood, the 100-year-old strawberry. So we... kind of an uncle, they carve into it, they make it such a thin, so then they put a layer of another very thin layer on top of it, and that's how it makes a sound.
So that's going to come up in your story, so I don't have to keep asking.
Absolutely. Right, absolutely. I'll share that with you as well.
When we were preparing for this, you make it so easy for a podcaster like me. You're just so prepared. You've got your new book just came out a couple weeks ago. At the time of this airing, mm-hmm. and which is entitled "Small Gym, Big Results."
Here is actually the first copy. Here's the first copy. I'm touching myself. I got a few days ago. And I'm so excited.
That's so cool, man. Yes. See, I'll let the, a spoiler here. Secret. At the time of this recording, the book is not even published. Correct. So I couldn't get that. I have my own digital copy, but I can't hold it up. So can you hold that up again?
Yes, absolutely. I can't believe it. I'm touching it. This is awesome.
Hold a little higher. So the
whole here we go.
Yes. How proud do you feel right now holding that up?
I feel amazing. I feel so amazing. It's 3 years of work and finally it's here in my hand.
Oh, man. I love that. When did you get it?
Just actually 2 days ago. I opened it and I was like, oh, my God, this is it. Yes. It's a lot of fun. Yes, I'm having
to you, brother. That is a beautiful feeling.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm really, really excited being here sharing my story.
Yeah. So, thank you for that segue, because you shared with me several topics that we could discuss. Now, this isn't a podcast for people who want to start a gym. Mm-hmm. Now, that said, if there happens to be anybody listening or watching that is interested in opening a gym, this is your lucky day.
Yes.
You just struck gold, baby. Because he's man.
Thank you.
That's not the actual point. Obviously, the focal point of the Tough Talks podcast, we're going to talk all things psychological, which you've got a lot to say about. Mm-hmm. And you gave me like a menu, which I got to choose from, of topics. Mm-hmm. And here they are. Here are the three. I don't know if we'll get to all three, but we're definitely starting with the first one.
No problem. Which is
vision and the balls.
That's right. That's what it takes.
I didn't even need to read the rest of that. But it's like vision and balls, the journey of how one man's illegal dream mm-hmm. turned into a million-dollar reality. And then the second one is changing lives, remembering where you came from, and paying it forward.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't love more. And finally, if we get there, your most important client. Four mm-hmm. ways to become and stay the leader of your business needs to grow and thrive. So let's start with vision and balls. Let's hear it, man. Give me a story, baby.
Absolutely. So when I wanted to start my gym, that's of course I had no money. I was starting and I didn't know how to start. I was watching this guy and he said, all you need is vision and balls. And I said to myself, I have them both. I have them both. I know exactly what I want and I have no fear. And I started my gym with $3,000 unemployment. I was fired from a job and unemployment gave me a $3,000. And that's how I started my small gym. But I would like to take you guys way back.
Thank you.
Way back. And then I start from, I was born in 1980 on a border of Iran and Iraq. 6 months later, basically a year before that, the revolution, Iran revolution happened, and the Shah of Iran left, and the Islamic basically government took over. And we were part of a religious minority in that on the border, and all the men in my religious minority, they kept their mustaches, so we were very easily be spot on. And government considered us as an infidels, so they were not giving us job. We didn't have university access, but we were such a small group, no one in the world was hearing about us. We were just a few hundred thousand people in the mountain and border of Iran and Iraq. And life was brutal, and the only way you could make money was to join the army. My uncles, my dad, everybody was basically sent to war. We see hundreds of people dying. I was around 8 years old. I remember they brought two people in our neighborhood. They hanged them. They were like 18, 19 years old. They hanged them, and I was 8 years old. I was watching it, and them kicking on the rope. I didn't have feeling for 2 weeks, and I didn't know what's happening. It was just so chaotic. And waking up in the morning, 4 or 5, my dad was not home, so he was sent to war. I was the oldest kid. I was like 7 years old. They sent me. I would stand in a line of bread, long line of bread, the shortage of food. We never ate meat and stuff. We didn't have money for meat. We just ate pretty much bread and rice all the time. And my family was 4 kids. And as I said, I was the oldest one, being 8 years old, going there. And I was in that region, I was very white skin compared to the other kids. And I had a green eye. So I was getting bullied every day. I was a very skinny kid. So life was brutal and painful. So we were going through that. And you talk about this musical instrument. Yeah. And a lot of, the government was not hiring us. So my dad's uncle, he knew how to make musical instrument, which was played kind of like a spiritual thing people play. And we start making those. We start making these, but music was illegal. Bodybuilding was illegal. Boxing was illegal.
Bodybuilding was illegal?
Absolutely. Beginning of the revolution happened because it was American. Anything American was considered as a propaganda. So even the boxing did not have federation. Bodybuilding.
Bodybuilding is an American thing?
Yeah, absolutely. Bodybuilding, because you're paying attention to your physical, and you were not allowed to show your skin. In Iran, no woman is allowed to show their skin, or even men at that time, especially at the beginning of revolution, men were not even allowed to wear short sleeves. So it's unimaginable for you Americans, for American to even imagine.
Already, only this deep into your story, I am already, and I hope everyone else is with me on this, feeling unbelievable appreciation for how beautiful my life is right now.
Absolutely. That's why I love to share my story, mostly because I want people to kind of reevaluate. Some of people, they make, I have a lot of people at the gym, they come and talk to me, they talk about the problem. There's a Persian saying, they said, this guy, he came and he said, I have a problem. And the monk told him, hey, go to the desert, to this tree, and drop your problem into that box. So he sat on a donkey. 3 days later, he's by this tree, and it is a box. He wants to put the problem inside, and he says, before you put yours, read three. So he picked up three and read them, and he tear his own one, because his is nothing compared to the others. Oh, wow. So I like to share my story for you, with people, that, hey, it doesn't matter how bad it gets. You got this. Just that's what I'm sharing. There's nothing special about me or as a parent. It's just when you are there, it will kick in, and you just got to stay strong, and it will pass. It's a phase that will pass. And that's my message of you constantly just got to go through stuff and being strong and having faith that good things are coming. So that was my attitude. When I was a kid, it was chaotic. So when you're looking at someone getting hanged, and I think later on at the age of 16, I saw a guy, they stoned him to death. So I was coming after the school, and the kids said, oh, they're stoning some guy, you know, down the by the graveyard, they're stoning him. And we all went, you know, because people were going, the TV had only two channels, and it was only propaganda about this regime, it was just sadness and death. So I went to look at, and I went to, they bury this guy half body, he's half of his body out, and they put a cover on his head. people throwing rock at him, and one of these, and then one guy threw a big rock at him, and we saw the blood coming out and a cloth, and then bam, he's dead. So I'm just, it was a wild, unimaginable. I would like to say, imagine. So life is going abroad, and life is brutal. And one day I'm playing soccer in the dirt. My friend showed me Arnold picture. And I said, what the hell is this? I've never seen a man like that. Yeah. He looked happy. He's standing by the beach, arms open, big arms. And he represented everything that I wanted to be. He wasn't weak. He was a deterrent. Like, I was getting constantly bullied. So I said, okay, this guy is perfect. And he's happy. He has food to eat. The picture is with the woman. And I'm like, wow, this is what I want to be exactly. And I was doing Taekwondo. I was a pretty competitive Taekwondo. I was very, very good at Taekwondo, but we could not go to national team because we were a religious minority. We could not represent the country. The only people could represent the country if they believed in basically what the government wants. So we were not one of them. So my dream kind of died with that going forward. This bodybuilding picture of Arnold put a fire in me. So I would go to black market. I would buy other bodybuilding picture, which I have them all here now in my garage. I put them all on a wall to remind myself how lucky I am to be here. So that bodybuilding picture was, I was just going in the back of a wrestling gym. I was pumping, but I couldn't get bigger because we were eating only rice and bread. I didn't know anything about protein. We didn't have food to eat. So fast forward, I go to university, art university. I was a smart kid. But I got cancer in my right eye. Then one day I feel a blurry in my right eye when we were playing with the air gun. I told my uncle said, take him to the doctor. I told my dad, and my dad took me to the doctor, and they said, hey, this is a serious thing. You have to take him to Capital City. So I went to Capital City. Doctors are coming at me. They're looking at my eye, and it's a rare disease, cancer. They said it cannot be treated in Iran, and it will leak to your liver, and that's it. So everyone is dying. Everybody's crying for me and thinking I'm going to die. Anywhere I go, people are feeling like somebody, I'm going to die. It was painful, man. It was painful, and I was like, I can't take this. I can't listen to these people. I want to be on the Arnold picture. The bodybuilding was an escape from the reality. That was my escape from reality because it was so painful. It was anywhere I turned, it was pain. And it was pain of poverty. It was the poverty was making us go against each other. The uncle throwing us out of our house. You know, it's just like it was. Poverty was root of the evil in all of us. Everyone was. If we had money, we would have been much nicer to each other. I knew that. So I say, you know what? I'm going to leave the country, go treat this cancer. And with $100 in my pocket, my dad had $100, I left. I ended up in Europe and working in pizza shop, restaurants. I would sleep in a pizza shop under the oven. When the owner closed the shop, they would take off and I work all day. I would sleep over there, but I'm under the oven.
Can I slow it down a second?
Sure.
So you were able to leave. You could just leave.
No, I left illegally. You can't leave Iran.
Can we get that detail?
Yes, absolutely. So just basically, I left the borders. I left illegally through the borders and left the country with the smugglers. And you just basically, a lot of time, you don't know where you're at.
So you were. Let's slow that down because mm-hmm. that seems like a really relevant piece of the story mm-hmm. that required a boatload of, balls. Mm-hmm. Was there, in your mind, was there the possibility of being killed?
Oh, absolutely. So people would get missing. So people get dropped off. And it was at that point, you cannot think like that, in my opinion. You cannot. It's just you're in a different mindset. You're surviving. You're running. You're running away from pain. And the pain is so great that you are not even evaluating what's next. You just want to run from that pain. And I just didn't care because I knew that, people would get, I saw in front of me, people would get, they would squeeze people out of money. You're dealing with organized kind of gangs that are running all these operations. You're very vulnerable. You're putting yourself in a very vulnerable situation and you have no control of many, many things. So you just got to let go and have faith. Sometimes in life, in my opinion, you don't have the answers. You just got to trust that it's like, you just got to trust. You just have to believe that there's a bigger thing waiting.
Wow. Talk about all in. That's a state of mind that I reference frequently, which is infinite commitment. You're familiar with it. That's all in, man. That's like, well, if I die, I die, but I ain't staying here with this. Right?
Absolutely.
And now, were you with people? Was it like planned? Was it like this escape?
No, there's not such a thing. When you're doing this kind of thing, it's not planned. So then you say, okay, let's get off and we're going. And then you start, nobody tells you the plan because you just go with the flow.
So
So
where did you go? Where like geographically, where did you go? Into Iraq?
You go from Kurdistan through the Kurdistan Kurdish area, and then you're in the back of the trucks and stuff like that. You really don't have no idea where things are. You're back of it for 3 days, 4 days. You're just having a little food and eating.
And the people driving the trucks are just doing it because they just want to help.
They don't know. Some of them don't know.
They
Some of
don't
them
even
know.
know.
Yeah, some of them don't know. Some of them knows. Those are not your deal. Those are you don't know what's going on. That's the deal with the people that are moving around. It's just.
So you're in, you used the word, I don't, I think you used the word a few moments ago, surrender.
Yeah, you gotta let go.
Let
You
go.
have to learn. You have to, otherwise it will eat you alive. And not only that, in throughout my whole journey, I built some kind of a survival mechanism of the way I think, the way I thought. I had to build that belief system for myself. I made it up. There's not such a thing that it's a made up thing that I made up for myself. At that point of my life, it was very, very helpful. But at this point of my life that I've progressed, those belief systems are working against me. So I'm right now I'm trying to undo them through therapy, through EMDR, through stuff. Why? Because those were amazing tools that I used at that time, but I cannot carry it to the point that when I'm successful and I'm dealing with the team and I'm dealing with the people, clients. So that was a great belief system I built for myself when I was alone. I had just nothing. I had basically a t-shirt and
That was a great, see that sentence right there. I'm sorry for interrupting you, but I
no
told you I'd
problem.
be doing this.
No, no problem, Chris. I
Because you
understand.
said, because what you said, man, that's mic drop material right there. That belief system that I created for myself, that's language that I think people need to hear slowly.
Absolutely.
You created a belief system for yourself that would serve you in that circumstance.
Correct.
That's
Correct.
possible.
That's correct.
That's what I want everybody to hear. That's a possibility, that everyone can do that. And you don't need
Absolutely.
to be running for your life.
No.
Okay.
And the main thing is you have to be extremely careful the way you talk to yourself. Extremely. So because as soon as you say doubtful things, negative, it will be like a spider web that it will catch you and you cannot come out of it because now you start out, you cannot talk to yourself like that. You have to stay constantly. Everything was going against me. My cancer, my throat, these things, everything was against me. Do I know that? Of course, I know. But the way I talk to myself, it's a bigger thing waiting for me. They will see me. They will see me when I'm shining. They will all be proud of me. Like I would tell myself, I am the warrior. I have it. I have what this. I've been chosen. I would tell my. Are these true? No. But I was telling myself that at that time, and I made it a reality in the long run. But I told myself that. I told myself, you're a warrior. You can take the pain. No one can take as much pain as you. I would tell myself constantly that the root of growth is pain. Pain is a good thing. It will make you grow. So I would tell myself positive things. When I was sleeping in a pizza shop under the oven, I could think of millions of bad things. I'm a loser. I'm a this, that. No, I would flip the bodybuilding picture and I was reading, trying to learn English. And I said to myself, I'm gonna be here. They're gonna see my gun arms. I'm gonna see my muscles here. I created a world and I lived in that world. I wouldn't live in nobody's world. I would live my own reality. In English, I think you say you're an architect of your own life. So that's kind of a thing that I built this beautiful bodybuilding world and I'm in it. I'm a star and I'm in America. I'm doing all this thing. And I was living that and I was thinking, okay, this is a phase. I'm pretty sure this pizza stuff and I'm sleeping it is a phase and I'll be there. Even at that time, I would strongly believe something big, but I didn't know what. I didn't trying to look for the answer because I didn't have any answer. I just had the vision as you earlier
That's
on at
not,
the
I knew you were
being
gonna,
started.
You're so good, man. This is so glad that we crossed paths, brother.
That is so important because can I tell you what the number one? So my whole life has been basically doing the same thing in different, you know, iterations. Mm-hmm. It's serving people. It's helping people create the lives that they want.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, so my whole career has been about helping people not settle, not struggle, and hopefully not suffer.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And what you just said is okay. So the number one mistake for 30 years I've been doing this. And the number one mistake that I've observed people making in the pursuit of life on their terms or the life of their dreams is getting paralyzed because they can't see how it's going to unfold.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Right? Immobilizing themselves because they think they need to see the how.
Mm-hmm.
You're telling a story about sleeping under a freaking pizza goddamn oven somewhere in Europe. And flipping through pages going, this is what I'm going to create. And you never got caught in the how. Maybe you had moments of, I don't know how, but it didn't stop you. You were just like the what. So it was the what.
Absolutely. Not at all. A lot of time, even people come to my gym, they want to train. They always think about the outcome. I want that six packs. I want a concept. And that outcome is bugging the hell out of them. It kills the joy of the process. So the thing is, I tell them, I show myself, hey, we're having a blast. Where do you want to be? You're in the gym having a blast. You are blessed to be healthy, to be able to push this weight. So having a six pack is awesome. Trust me, I've been 3% body fat. I could see vein in my head. There was no difference. It looked great from outside, but I was feeling miserable inside from the dieting. So sometimes the idea of having this stuff is actually a lot more than having it. Like, for example, having a Ferrari is an amazing idea, but once you have it, you have to have the maintenance, upkeep, the tire, the thing is so expensive.
You know, so what's so funny?
It kills the
joy. I
didn't
realize this until I just took a sip of this. So this says, create the state, don't wait. And that's really what you're talking about.
That's
exactly right. Don't wait for the six pack. Go get the six pack, but don't wait for the six pack to feel.
Yeah, have the fun.
And you're laying under a pizza oven,
mm-hmm.
and you're feeling, this is so good, man. This
Thank you, brother.
Better. I'm just so right now, like in love with you and your story. The way you're telling it, you're amazing.
Thank you. Thank you, brother.
You know, you're staying. I've already taken a shitload of notes here. It's like the power, how unbelievably enormously important the way we're speaking to ourselves and or what we're thinking, what we're putting in our heads. So you're literally sleeping under a pizza oven because you're working in that pizza store. Is that the thing? You had a job there? Where is this, by the way? Is it in England?
Yeah, England. So I was in, so this pizza shop, it was in a suburb of London. And then I was the way I found job, I just want to tell you guys something about finding jobs.
Okay.
You know how I found jobs? No. I didn't speak English. The only thing I knew is I'm looking for a job. That's the only sentence I knew. I'm looking for a job. So I would tell myself, this is street. This is street from here, from the beginning to the end and coming back. I'll go to every single one of them. I would go in and say, hello, I'm looking for a job. And they said, no job. And I said, okay. I would go next door and say, I'm looking for a job. And then, some of these guys would say, okay, come back. And I would go back and say, okay, clean this. And I would clean the bag or whatever they had to wash, and they would give me a little money. And then that was one day. Or some people say, okay, come from tomorrow, come and work. And this pizza shop told me, okay, come work, passing flyers, you know, flyers to the houses. And it was over there, rains and stuff like that. I would have this heavy bag on my shoulder. I would just pass. And I have to say, I want to just make people conscious and through this as well. People hated us because we were coming from, we were immigrant, and they were looking at us. They called us name and they called us. I don't blame them. It's okay. I'm not angry at anybody. I just want to make conscious and educate people. It was so hurtful and painful to me. I ran away from that country and I'm coming here seeking help. And the way they look at us, they were thinking we're changing their culture, their jobs, and we're stealing them. It wasn't true. I was in the bottom of the society. I was like, I didn't do anything. I couldn't do anything. I was like, I was literally lost. And it was so painful, but I couldn't believe. I said, man, they hated us over there in Iran because of our religion. And here they hate us because of the way I look or the color or whatever. It's not a good thing. I just want to make a conscious in case I just, anyway, I went through that. And But I was staying positive. I was going to the gym. I went to this gym, and it was owned by a world champion. I was training at that gym. Was a heaven. It was a dungeon. You go down to play heavy metal. Nobody cared about your race or who you are, religion. The only thing mattered who has the bigger guns. And I had the big. So your effort was measured. Not the way you look or you talk and stuff like that. Your English was good, not good. Doesn't matter. You live and everyone respected. I would always show up. I was a kid. I was showing up. I was pumping and I wouldn't leave till I'm like dead. And over in that gym, I would skip the reality of a pain of being all this stuff that was happening around me in TV every day. They had this. Every day they were talking about immigrant refugee and send them back, send them this. It was a very fearful thing. Every moment you're thinking they come and grab you, they sent you, you can go back home and you can you can be dead back home. They can put you in prison, and consequences of that is absolute death in Iran, as you can see even these days how they're executing people left and right. Sorry if I'm moving fast. you can stop
me. Bro, and I suspect so is the entire audience right now, just lost in the beauty of your story. Keep going, man.
So I was there, but unfortunately, I didn't like the environment and the way they were getting treated. I said, you know what? This is not it. This is not a place. This is not my. It wasn't me. And I said, I'm going to go to America. And a little money. I bought a fake passport from this smuggler. He had this passport. He put my picture on it. It was crooked. The picture was crooked. It was so fake. I look at it. Oh my God, this is, what am I going to do? I can't go to, it's not like a real shop. You can go, oh, can you fix this? No, it's done deal. So I said, man, this is it. So I went to the airport and
airport?
It was in England.
Yeah.
So, and then the lady scanned the passport. Said, son, this doesn't work. And I knew she'd just given me the warning. And I said, scan it again. That was my only money I had. That was the only chance I had. And she said, okay, wait here. And then I saw them start radioing each other, all the guard, every security, every police. And they're looking at me. And I said, stay calm. Just, I talked to myself. I said, don't do anything. Don't just, this is it. Do or die. And I went in a plane. And they put one guy in front of me. And he was keep turning around looking. I said, if I stay up, I'm going to. I just got to fall asleep. I forced myself, I closed my eyes. I wasn't doing much and I wasn't doing anything. So the plane landed in America. As soon as it landed, they announced everyone.
Wait, hold on. So they let you on?
Because they taught. I'll tell you the story, what happened. I'm unfolding it slowly so you can see what, no problem. So they arrested, they came and they announced, okay, everyone remain seated. Suddenly the police came into the police come into the plane, and they said, "You stand up, big man." I stood up, and they put a handcuff on me, and they bring me out. And I told me, "You're Albanian gangster." I said, "Oh, I'm not Albanian because I was white skin and I had the green eye." At the time, they was working against me in Iran. This time, I got a pass to. And I said, no, I'm not, I'm Iranian and I'm from a religious minority and this and that. And they said, you're not Iranian. They brought a translator and they talked to me and said, oh, okay. So they put handcuff on me. And now they think I'm a militant from Iran because I'm a little bit, I'm muscle. So they think, oh, this is a militant passing through all these airports. They put handcuff on me. They throw me in this little jail. There was Mexican mafia.
What city were you in?
Chicago.
Oh.
So they threw me in this little jail, like a little, very, very little, small. There was six bunk and the toilet was right in the middle. And this, I had no idea about Mexican mafia. I had none of this stuff. I had any idea what works. And everyone had tattooed. Everyone could read what they are, the code they had. And they crossed the hall was MS-13. And they were swearing at us and these guys were swearing at them. It was madhouse. And I was like, I lay in my bunk. I said, I stopped crying. A tear came. I said, that's it. I'm done. I can't do nothing. Then the next day, I just want to say this right here. Sometimes you have no answer to what happened to you in life. You don't. You don't need to look for it. Don't look for it because you will torture yourself and you will make the matter worse. Just shut it off. Hang in there. You just got to handle it. Handle it and ride that pain. Nothing going to happen to you. You're breathing. That's the only thing matter. You breathing is just the emotion that is coming and it's heavy. It's painful. I get it. Trust me. It was nobody, nobody. I couldn't make phone calls, nothing. I had nobody. Who am I? It's only me. And that's it. That's it. You will start making a lot of belief system. Either you, suddenly you become too religious, something to me. Be very careful not to give yourself a big belief system, because what it does is it takes you to a wrong way. It can take you to a wrong place, and it creates another problem. So the only thing I suggest, my experience, hang in there and ride the pain and realize this is a phase and you got this. Otherwise you wouldn't be here. Somebody told me in the past and said, if you didn't have this strength, you would not be challenged. You are getting challenged because you have it in you. If you didn't, it wouldn't be you. So I'm there and I'm seeing these people, and then they transferred us to a bigger prison. Now I'm going to the maximum security prison with blindfolded. They're rolling me into concrete buildings, big buildings. I have no idea where I'm at. I have no right to make phone calls. I'm constantly getting interviewed by CIA, FBI, all kind of agency coming, wow, taking me 6 hours a day, 5 hours a day, no food, nothing. I'm just, they're grilling me because they're thinking I've done something. And they're doing all kind of background check, fingerprint, or whatever you name it. They did it, constantly moving me from one prison to another so I don't make many friends. And over there, you see crazy, crazy characters. One of my cellmates was one of the biggest Chicago mobsters. His nickname was Nino. And his name actually was in the Guinness book. I'm not going to mention his name. So he was my cellmate. And I remember the first day we were sitting there. I'm a very bad loser. So we were placing cards. We play cards. And he was my partner. And I didn't know who he is. I just got into this prison. And there were two other guys who were playing with us. And we lost. And I told this guy, hey, man, you're stupid or something. You didn't throw the card. And he said, oh, you're stupid. Man. And he looked at me. He walked away. And the other two guys and said, are you fucking crazy? I said, what happened? He said, do you know who this guy is? And I said, no, man, who the fuck is? And it's, you're going to get killed here, man. Don't talk to this. Go apologize or something. Just do it.
And what was the card game, by the way? Do you remember what the card game was that you were playing?
Spade.
Spade.
Yeah. 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 So I became a really, really good chess player over there too. Actually, there was one guy who was pissing me off because he would just look the other way and he would play with me and he would beat me without looking at it. So it was amazing. So this guy we became friends with Nino. I became friends because I couldn't trust anybody over there. I could not trust. After a few months, they gave me a lawyer. This lawyer was one of these students that, you know, they do these cases for charity. So he had my case, but they were asking so many questions that they were weird, like weird questions that, no, I'm not. Like, and I came to the cell and I said, Nino, I'm scared. I don't know even that this lawyer is with me or not. I don't know who's with me, who's not. So he said, give me his name. I gave his name. He said, wait, lunchtime, I'll figure this out. Once they let us out of the cell, because we could not see outside, like I didn't see sky, we were all inside, we were like nothing, we couldn't do anything. He went and he made a phone call. He came back, he said, Sivash, this is his address, where he lives, how many kids he has, what he does, don't worry, he's on your side. And I said, oh my God,
wow.
that's
pretty efficient.
Yeah, they were really, really crazy characters. So after almost a year being there, I went to a judge. And the judge looked at my case, and my lawyer presented the case. Of course, we're part of coming from Iran. And the judge told me that he granted me a refugee asylum to stay in the country. And even the Homeland Security got up and shook my hand and says, I'm sorry about what happened. It's just, no problem. You know, I understand. I came here in a wrong way. I was running, you know, and I came and I broke the law, and everything you did, it was fine. You know, just like it's at the end of the day, I respect the thing, but I made a promise myself.
Can I just first pause, just hold that where you are? Because that's amazing too.
Thank you.
You could just be pissed off, man. And you could be a guy. Nah. Well, you have options, but I like the one you're picking.
Yes.
Like you're saying, and you're saying it very as a matter of factly, but it isn't as a matter of fact, which is why I do these slow down moments. Because that's you took ownership. That language you just used, man, was totally powerful ownership language. You said it's all good. You can be like, yeah, well, no shit. Thank you. Finally, you just ruined the cure of my life. Thanks a lot. As opposed to, hey, man, I came here the wrong way. I broke the rules. We good.
Yes. Like, and I have to say, in a worse situation, you're learning something. I learned so much about the street life, about not doing bad things when I'm out. The Nino told me, hey, Sebash, when you go out there, don't hang out with the bad people because you'll be one of them. If you are good, one of the good ones, you will be good. And another thing he told me to stay away from, he said, stay away from religion and politics. These two are there. You never come to conclusion and you always make enemy. So these three, I've always followed it, my life in America. And I am having a blast. So many people here love me and support me. And I think because of that, and going back to saying, yes, you're taking it the right way. That is another way of talking to yourself. That is talking to me. I can come home and say, oh my God, they destroyed my life. Or I can say, hey, that was a phase. I'm ready. Now what's next? And at the time when you are going through stuff, you have no idea these are assets later on. Right now that I have a book and I have everything, these become my asset. These are my stories at the time.
Look what we're doing right now. This very moment.
Yes.
You and I are serving humans right now through your past suffering.
Yes, exactly. So if you're going through something, it will be a lesson for someone else. They won't make it repeated again. You will pass it on. And I always say that the gym, iron sharpens iron. So we are, by talking, me and you talking here, we evaluate each other's thoughts. You might be sometimes thinking a different way, but you're hearing someone else's. And it makes you evaluate your own thought. And they might say, hey, am I wrong? So it happened to me many times. I've had a certain view because I come from Iran. I come from a different culture. And I've come here and an American had completely different value. And I was like, what they're saying, is it I can be completely opposed of it or be listening to it and evaluate. Is this maybe part of it is right? Maybe I won't accept everything, but a portion of it that I can implement to my life and make my value a little richer. So I'm coming back to this. No, I wasn't pissed at all. I wasn't angry at all. I thanked them. I said, thank you so much. You know, I appreciate it. And even many years later, when I become successful and my gym becomes successful, I send a picture of myself holding an award, big award, winning award, and to my lawyer. And he said, oh, my God, I'm so proud of you. But the time that the judge gave me the granted asylum, I told myself right there, I said, I'll make this guy be proud of the decision he made. I'll make sure I go out there and be a good, productive member of this country, society, so they don't think, oh, I came and he's a bum or something like that. No, I want to be a good person doing things. I didn't know what I'm going to do. I had no idea what I'm going. I just knew I'll be a good person. You know, I won't do bad things to end up in prison again. I won't do crime or stuff because I saw it. So many people were there, made mistake, and they ruined their lives. I said, no more of this, none of that stuff. So I learned a lot about the street language in America, which I think it was like a university for me over there. So it was I'm not mad. And I think it was actually very educational.
I love that, man. That's beautiful. That is truly beautiful. It's creating from every experience, man. Creating from every experience. That's one of my favorite mantras. That's the abbreviated version. The longer version is, every set of circumstances can be created from if viewed masterfully. So I'm out.
I'm in a city of Chicago. No shoelaces because in prison when you take your shoelaces, you don't. So I'm on the street and I'm, wow, this country is huge. I'm looking at these big buildings. I'm like, oh my God, I can't even cross the street. This place is so big. But I'm seeing people underneath of all the bridges. They know I'm out of prison because they see my shoes. And I told myself, okay, if I'm out here, either I will hurt someone or someone will hurt me. So I could tell I would make eye contact with them. They would make eye contact. So we knew what the language is. So I said to myself, I got to do something. And this taxi driver was past. I said, hey, can you take me to where the Persians are? He said, I know one restaurant, but you have to pay $100 to take it. It's far. And I said, okay, 1 second. And I went to my phone list that I made in prison. I had a bunch of phone number from people, and some of them become religious or become completely convert, you know, from being bad person, like they become, they stop praying. So I called one of the guy and I said, hey man, I'm on the street. I don't know where to go. So he said, okay, where you at? And I told him, I said, oh, we'll pick you up. And then he came with his family, kids and stuff like that. He took me to his house. He was from Guatemala originally. And he was working in a restaurant. So he had a basement and he threw a mattress in a basement And I was just sleeping there, and I kept going to library. I would come and I would print out, I would read. And sometimes they had a family that they would go clean houses in people's houses. So I would go and clean houses with them. They give me $100. So I would buy milk for them. I would just anything that I could help with the house. I would cut grass, whatever I had to do just to give back. And once I got a couple $100 and Chicago about to snow, and I hate the snow because I grew up in the western part of Iran, which is snowed, and all those memory of being in a line for bread, for meat, oil. It just brings those back. My feet always being frozen in those messed up shoes when I was a little kid. So I hated snow. I said, you know what? I'm going to go to California. I got the $140 I paid ticket for a train, and it took me two, three days to get here. And I end up in LA again. I'm in a Union Station, homeless. And the funny thing is, I just want to tell you this, that because it was snowing, a lot of homeless people were jumping in a train, and those guys were homeless. And I was homeless too, but I never viewed myself as a homeless. I was looking at myself as a champion who's coming to California to conquer the world. So that's why I'm coming back again, the way you talk to yourself. I could have said to myself, I'm homeless, I have nobody, where I'm going. But I was coming with excitement to conquer. And the guys were sitting right next to me, they talked to me, but I wasn't one of them. I was one of them, but I was telling myself, I'm not one of the homeless guys. So I ended up here.
That's amazing. That's amazing. That's worth slowing down again. I'm glad you brought it up again.
Thank you.
Right? Is creating or you're talking about creating your world with your thinking.
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
So yes. Is it true that you're homeless? Yes. Are you homeless? No, I'm creating.
Yes.
While I'm homeless, but I'm not homeless. Right? Creating your own deal, having your own deal. I'm a warrior. Yes. I'm here creating a dream.
Yeah, because you can break your spirit in an instant. Look, let's do a simple exercise. Put your arms down, put your head down, and tell yourself one little sad story. That's it. You ruined it.
Yeah, right.
You ruined the moment. So it's just how you want to talk. So I came, and then I'm. Here, the same thing. The guy I told the taxi, where's the Persians are? He dropped me in an area here in LA called Glendale, which most of the Persian Armenians are. Oh. And he dropped me over there. And again, I'm like, oh my God, this place is beautiful. The sun and everything. I called one of my friends in England. I said, hey, man, I'm here. I'm stuck. I don't know what to do. I don't know where to go. It's just too confusing. He said, okay, I know somebody. So the guy came. And I told him I'm looking for a place, and he didn't know anything as well. His English wasn't good. So he lived here, but his English wasn't good. And I told myself, okay, I walk in the street, and I saw a sign, it says rent. And I saw the guy, and I told him, hey, man, I rent this, and I just came here. He charged me like a $650 for a little room in a back house. And I jumped on the street. I go to the shops. I'm asking the same style, asking everybody. And then I was reading news. I look at the papers. There were like a paper, you know, the stand. And I would look for a job. And there was a lot of security job. And that was recession just happened. 2008. It was 2008. Recession was crazy. And there was no job. So I found this security job working graveyard shift from night till morning. And I would be all the security guard were messed up shirt. They don't shave. I go there sharp. My tie on, sharp, I'm clean shave, I'm ready to go. At night, every time the manager pops up, I'm wide awake looking around, I'm ready to go. He says, everybody sleep at their post. Why should I never catch you? Son? You can never catch me. I'm reading bodybuilding. I'm studying all night. I'm studying, I'm reading bodybuilding, I'm reading nutrition, anything that I can. I was like, okay, this is the best time for me. I have no interruption. I just have to open gate for people. And the people in the gated community, they love me because every time they come at night, before they come, I memorized all the license plates and every single people that they were coming community, I knew the license plate. And if they had a guest, I would log it in. I was so organized, and they made me the manager. And the boss made me the manager because everybody loved me. So, and I became a manager. I working and I moved to the shift 7 to 3, and then 3 o'clock I would take off and I would go to Gold's Gym, North Hollywood, and train, man. I'll go give it everything I got. And another guy was there. It was an older guy. And one of the things, you see that guy? I said, yeah. He said, he trained the world champion, one of the world champions. His name was Flex Wheeler. He said, he trained Flex Wheeler and Paul Dier. I said, him? So I went to the guy. I said, excuse me, sir. I want bigger legs. And he looked at me and says, come back tomorrow. I'll show you. I said, I don't have money. I only make $8 an hour. I can't pay you. If you tell me, I'll do it. He told me, come back tomorrow. And I said, okay. I came back. He trained me 3 years. not a penny, charged me every single day at 3:30. He introduced me to all the big time bodybuilders. He took me to Gold's Gym, all the big bodybuilders, you name it. I rub elbow with them. He taught me how to train the American bodybuilding exactly, not a penny. And he kind of was treating me like a father. You know, he was way older than me. Mr. Peter Longwood, amazing, amazing man, amazing man. So I would meet a lot of people. And one thing I like about American culture is like they think people here, the thing is abundance. There's enough for all of us. There's a lot here versus in the other part of the world, people don't believe that. Like when I was in Europe, people think, oh, because we came, there's not enough for them. That is a wrong attitude. There's so much. And in America, fortunately, we have the abundance mindset. So many people have helped me to be here. So many. I'm like, I'm the face of that. But behind me, so many. It just neighbors here, there. I'll get to that. How much they helped me to build this gym. And everyone rooted for me. So I've been surrounded with amazing people. And I was, the good thing was, one attitude that I had, I love people. I love talking to people. I love talking. As you can see, I'm taking over.
I'm so happy. I'm talking. It's very handy for me.
So, I enjoy talking because I always find it interesting, other people, how they think, what they, it's like, I'm just having fun. I just have a blast when I enjoy talking to people and share stuff. So I made a lot of great friends here, and they've been supporting me. So I was training and I started to myself, this is the time. Now I'm going to compete. I got ready for a show. I hired a nutritionist. I paid him $400. I was working security 7 to 3. And then I would rush from there. My work, 3:30, I was at the dot. I was at the training because Mr. Peter was there. I had to train with Mr. Peter. We trained till 5:30. I had to go home, shower and everything, 7 o'clock p.m. I had to be another post till 2 a.m. And then 2 a.m. I would come sleep till 6, and 6 get up, eat my 5:30, my eggs and all the chicken and everything. I would have to be at work at 7. So I would, everything was machine. I calculate every penny I had to pay for chicken. I only eat chicken. I didn't eat red meat because I didn't have money. So I calculate. I say, okay, if I eat 6 meals a day. I eat 10 eggs and I eat this chicken. So I would buy from Ralph. I would buy the store. I would buy a whole chicken for $5. And I knew, okay, that $5, I split it in half, one day here. So I calculated every penny. So I knew how I can afford my stuff. So I don't ask people for money or get in debt or anything like that. My focus was bodybuilding. So I kept pushing. I went on a stage. I got the trophy. I'm driving. Oh my God, I'm in America. I see this picture. I'm on a stage posing. And finally, I made it, man. But suddenly, I went into the dark side of the bodybuilding. I realized what it takes, those drugs, steroid, and then the culture of bodybuilding changed in the recent years. Back in the days, when I was watching it from Iran, it was this lifestyle, beautiful lifestyle, American lifestyle that bigger than life through Joe Weider publication. He made them a star. But unfortunately, in a recent year, bodybuilding has geared toward being mean, looking ugly, and being intimidating, and posing like those kind of characters, and that's not bodybuilding. So, plus the drug, it just got so much more, and it become a lot of politics that who wins, who was so it become. I saw the ugly side of it, but I wasn't giving up. I said, you know what, I'm going to make this happen. The gym that I trained in England, it was a dungeon. And I was going to these gyms around here, and I said, what's up with this, all this shiny stuff here? It just, everything is pretty. And after 13 years, I got a refugee passport. So I went to Turkey to see my family. When I came back, they fired me from a job for no reason. I'm like, why? What did I do wrong? And because he wanted to put his own brother, the guy, the boss, he wants to put his own brother in my job. So he let me go. And we ended up, we go to the, I had to go to unemployment. I was so embarrassed standing in a line. I had no choice. I was looking for a job. It was 2000. I was looking for a secure job. I couldn't get it because a lot of soldiers were coming back from Iraq and stuff like that. And they are a lot more qualified than I am. They were like soldiers. The real security job is nothing. These guys were applying for the same job that was like $10 or something. And they would get hired. I wasn't mad because they were more qualified than I was. It wasn't that, oh, they don't like me because of, no. These guys were actually more qualified. So I'm not getting, catching a break. So I had to go to unemployment. I was so embarrassed. I was like, God, man, what is this? And but the judge said, you know what? It's a wrongful firing. This is not a reason. There was no reason. So he gave me $3,000. I had this $3,000. I said, this is it. $3,000. And I was on Craigslist looking and stuff. And this gym, and it wasn't a gym. It was a little place in Culver City. The guy wanted $1,900. And I said, you know what? I have $3,000. I'll give him $1,900. Maybe I can. I was tackling stuff. So I gave the guy $1,900. I said, hey, I'll give you the money the next month. If you can give me a break for a deposit. I don't have it right now. I'll give you next month. I had a couple of dumbbells, up to 30 pounds, and a bar and a couple of plates. But I knew about I could kill anybody with those couple of dumbbells. So people would come to me and say, oh, what's going on here? I'll put the banner over the gym. And people would come and say, where's the gym? I said, this is the gym. It looked like a hospital. It was like gray walls and a concrete floor and a couple of dumbbells in that corner with a boxing bag. And I tell them, just train with me, you know, I'll get you in shape. So I just try a free session. I would kill them. They would throw after 10 minutes and it's a bar. And they loved it. They would bring their friend, hey, come on here, this guy's crazy. And I would train them and they would throw up, they would feel it. I start getting result, and people bring their friends and everything. The next thing I know, the mayor of Culver City training with me. People are from Sony Studios down the street, people coming. My clients are all smart business people, all Americans, they come. And this one tell me, oh, make your website like that. I said, I don't know how to make that. I'll make it for you. The guy tell me, oh, paint the wall. I don't know how to do it. I'll do it for you. Neighbor, anybody that was in my gym was doing something, helping me somehow. The guy, I don't know how to set up my stuff. They would do it for me because I'm not a very good techie person. Everything I did along the way, people give me business advice, give me accounting. So, but I couldn't make it. It was just a hustle. It was a lot of hustling. And I was like, man, there must be a better way. I can't figure it out. So this guy comes to my gym, and this, he has a big belly and he speaks very soft, very like soft. And he talks to me. He tells me, oh, you've got to change your business like this. And I said, what is this guy talking about? I'm killing here, people. He told me, oh, your business is like Apple. You need to have a formula, but you have to do this. I said, no, man, my business is not like Apple. I'm killing people. I'm a lift weight. And I'm like, blah, blah, blah. So he started teaching me about business. He started mentoring me. He taught me about how marketing works, hack everything. So I start working on my system and start making the gym exactly appealing to busy professional, the avatar. I interviewed 100 people of my clients to see who are these people, where they're coming from, exactly why they're here. Then once I figured out who they are, then I start talking to them through my channels, through social, every single day. I put myself out there. At the beginning, I was very doubtful of myself. I just want to tell your audience over there, if you're trying to take action, if you want to try to do something, at the beginning, there are a lot of voices in your head. I was thinking, oh my God, my grammar is not good. My mustache is my big head. Those voices come to your head. Don't worry, just do it. The cure of the fear is action. If you want to cure that fear, action. Oh, every man. Time. Yeah. And so when I was constantly being analyzing myself. So I got the camera to beat around the bushes, not to do the videos. I bought a big equipment, camera equipment, stuff like that. I didn't do even one video with the big cameras. Grab your phone. Grab that phone. Just put it in your face. And I said, welcome to Six Pack Gym. Let's go. I give every single day a tip to my community. And I've been posting over... I have on my phone over 70,000 videos and pictures I've posted in the last few years. So imagine how much I put myself out.
70,000,
yes. So I want to tell you, when I talk about consistency of putting yourself out there, and remember, you're talking to a moving train. Don't be thinking, oh, because I said that yesterday, I can't say it again. Mm-hmm. You are talking to a moving train. Keep putting your message out there. Keep saying it. Keep saying who you are. Be proud, loud. I have this very good saying. I heard this. It's not mine. I heard it from somebody. Actually, I'm going to give you credit to him. His name was, he called himself Mask. And he was a owner of Tap Out clothing line. He said, I may not be the one that touches million, but I may touch one that touches million. So you have no idea who you're touching. It might not be you that doing all this big thing, but you might inspire a kid. That kid might change the world. So that's why it's very important for you, all of us, your audience, me and you are doing it right now, sharing our story and putting ourselves out there with being loud and proud. Of course, you get those comments or some people may say something negative. It's okay. It's okay. The good and bad is they're part of the ecosystem.
Can I ask you a question here?
Yes.
So many people throughout this story,
I've wanted to help you. Why do you think so many people, what is it about you? I have a hypothesis on this, but I want to hear your answer. All right. How come so many people wanted to help you? That guy trained you for 3 years. He said, I want bigger legs. He never charged a penny. Right. People say you need to paint this place. They did it for you. You know, you got to do this website. They did it for you. How come? Why? What is it?
Everything I say is an assumption. So I don't want to, I'm going to say something, what I'm assuming. I think the hearts are connected. You know, the heart are connected. It's just like when you want to give, you get. I think I believe it's in the Bible. It says I don't know about the religion, but I think so. It's not about the religion, but I think it's a nature. When you give, you get, you receive. You're just like when you have an intention of giving, and but at that, for those people, they had the intention of giving, and I was there. So those people are. I have to give the credit to those people. They had the same thing, and now I'm giving. I learned from Mr. Peter.
I told your literary agent, Angela, the other day, or after we spoke for the first time, mm-hmm. I said, "Wow, what an amazing vibe that guy has."
Thank you.
Which was immediately obvious to me. So that's my hypothesis. Okay, so I'll just go out.
I have to say that is kind of true, because anywhere I go, anywhere I'm standing in a line, people talk to me. I go to anywhere, people, police pulled me over a couple of times. They didn't give me a ticket. They look to talk to me, and they start talking about bodybuilding. So it's just, it's not about, I don't know. As I said, I have assumption. I don't know, but everywhere people treat me very good, especially in America. I know there's a lot of maybe bad stuff happening. I personally, I'm talking about my own personal experience. Everybody in America here, I would say 99%, be nice to me. I'm really having a blast with people everywhere.
You're killing it.
Yeah.
Right? You're killing it. You're making seven figures with this 800 square foot damn gym in Culver City, and you're killing it. You've created your dream.
Absolutely. I'm absolutely living it every minute. The gym is a madhouse. People come, go. It's fun. People bring their dog, their kids.
I want to come see you. I want to come visit you.
I'm more than happy to take
you. I'm in LA. I want to come meet you, man.
Absolutely. You'll love the place.
I'm sure I will, because I'll just be soaking up the vibe, man. So this is all right. So I had an idea about three times that I want to share with you. I'm going to make a request. Mm-hmm. Because I know you're not done. I haven't even totally finished the first of the 3 points. But we've gone for an hour.
Yes.
What I'm going to suggest is, if you're willing, that we could do a part two.
Absolutely. No problem. Absolutely.
Where we could, now the story's been told. I think you've won all of our hearts, brother. Okay?
Thank you.
And then we can talk about changing lives and like the business end of it.
Yes, absolutely.
Right, just now that you've arrived and you created your vision from the most like horrible situations, and you've created miraculousness.
Yes,
that alone is enough for us. But you got more to say about how to treat people and how to think of yourself in order to thrive in business. And I say, let's make that session two.
If you're absolutely. Absolutely, absolutely. I love the vibe here. I love what you do, and I respect what you do. And absolutely, I'll be more than happy. I'll be more than happy to be here for a second time. I just want to say, people who are just listening to the part, and this is at the end of the day, I'm coming as a business. So I'm going to pitch the book one more time, because in this book, the first section of this book is kind of my story of how I came all the way through this struggle. And hopefully, of course, the goal of this book is part of it is people being interested in a six-pack gym and start opening this little gyms in their own community all over America. That's my vision. So we can serve people with these small places that care about people. You're not the number. In the big gyms, you're a number. But in a small place is a community that I want to build, this kind of little community all over America, that people go, you're depressed, you go to the gym, pump, you feel better. You have no friend. Here we are. There's hundreds of us at this gym waiting for you to shake your hand and welcome you. So it's going to be all over the country. This book, A Small Gym, Big Result, teaches people how, if you have some struggle or you have an idea, start. Let's go. Let's go. Vision and balls. Let's go. And the rest of it, it will go into every aspect of a business, which for a lot of you will show you even how to do customer service, how to call people by their name, the things that are important, very little things that are forgotten. The art of relationship is getting forgotten because of all these automation and all these emailing stuff. No, we are at this little place, this little gym, and we love helping everybody. So the Small Gym, Big Result on Amazon, if you just type this, or you can put go to the website, actually, smallgymbigresult.com. You will see it and you can order it.
That's awesome, man. Beautiful. Congratulations again on that. But, and congratulations on everything.
thank you.
Congratulations on being the guy. I mean, you are, seriously, you are a mental coach, man.
Thank you.
You don't have to say it. I'm saying it for you.
Thank you.
Thanks for making time. I will put in the show notes a link to the Amazon, to the book, also your social media links if people want to connect with you, the website, the gym and all. So, you and I will set up a time, okay, to be continued and to get into the details of the rest of it, all right? Like how to use your spirit and your leadership in order to, you know, to really grow. Because just to get the place was pretty miraculous. But to have it thrive.
Yes. That's what
your six-pack gym, thriving is a whole nother story for us to open up.
That's
the mechanics of that.
Let's next time to show you how you must change. In order to grow something, you must grow along with it. So let's talk about that. If you like the growth that I had, of course, I did all this stuff, but some of the belief system that I made along the way to get here, it worked against me. When I start building teams, when I start building people around me, I needed a relationship and growth to build this small gym. So I would like to dive into that to tell you how you got to shift all those stuff that, because I can say this to make it simple. I was running away from pain. Now I'm running towards success. So I'm running towards success now. At that phase of my life, I was running away. So this shift, I like to cover it next time if you're here, so your audience hopefully can benefit from that as well, from that experience.
Now, one last request.
Yes.
What was it? Running from pain, and now you're running towards, what did you say? You're running towards
success.
Success. Mm-hmm. All right, so my final request is when we do our version two or our second interview, will you play one of those Persian instruments for us?
I'll play a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, you're good. I'm holding you to that, man. I'm giving you time to practice.
I'm starting now.
Say your name so we can say it properly.
Absolutely. I'm going to say it the way I like to say it to be proud of now. Siavash Fasci, the founder and CEO of the most successful small gym in America.
Oh, man. This has been amazing. Thank you.
Here we go. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Great being with you today. Thank you so much.
Thanks for thank you, everyone, for listening as well. Thank you.
Even his name is cool. Siavash Fasci. It's fun to say. Siavash Fasci. What a vibe. We just got to one. And I'm so happy. That's all we got to, because I think that's all we needed to get to today. There's so much learning in that story, in his story. So we stopped recording and we kept talking for a few minutes. This is the first time I've ever really spoken to him. And we spoke once before, but not in a meaningful way. We just scheduled stuff and checked on audio and crap. But my God, I don't think I told him after we stopped recording. I reiterated, you're a mental coach, bro, whether you know it or not. Like, you definitely are. Like, he's just hammering some of the most important things that I work with on people all the time, which is, what are you saying to yourself? What are you choosing to fill your mind with, right? And how critical that is. And then, I mean, he was talking about surrender,
which we have a recent episode on, actually just a couple before this one, actually. Which is completely on surrender. With a guy named Coop Blackson. Probably two episodes ago on surrender. And he's talking all about surrender and not needing to know how and keeping the faith and staying with it and staying with it. He just never bailed, man. That's, wow. Oh, I forgot to ask him. Oh, shoot. Okay. Note to self. I wrote it down, but I didn't ask him. When's the movie? Come on, man. We need a movie, bro. This is movie material. Like, duh. Get on that. Let's go. All right, everyone. Thanks for tuning in, as always, to Tough Talks. And until next time, great miracles.